Hey, Nick. Me and Lynn got this scale of buzz level. I'm just wondering where yours is at. Like,
Somewhere right about there.
Oh, he's at the nip level. That's fantastic.
Ooh, yeah.
Welcome to the Nerdentials Podcast, starring your host, Joe Tweedy, Matthew Johnson, Nick Thomas, and Lynn Dudgeon.
Oh, sorry. It was supposed to.
Did the Wookiee ever rub his nips? That was a rhetorical question. Of course he did.
I was gonna say, did the Wookiee not rub his nips?
To be fair, we don't know where they are. It's covered in hair. I'm sure Harrison Ford could speak on that.
Let's stop talking about Chewbacca nipples.
We should definitely find a fancy place to move on.
Let's Kashyyyk the hell out of here.
All right. That being said, guys.
That was pretty fancy.
I did appreciate that as well, Lynn. Welcome to Nerdentials, your weekly dose of the nerdy essentials covering film, TV, video games, and comic books. I'm your host, Joe Tweeden. And joining me today in person, physically next to me, as he rubs his chest down with excitement, we have the Lynn Dudgeon.
Heyo!
That might have spiked in the mic. I can't tell because we don't have monitors.
It feels great, though, in person, I bet.
It does. I felt the authenticity of that motion you made. We don't have the redheaded ginger tonight. Rest in peace, Matthew.
The coronavirus has gotten him.
Oh, we should not spread that kind of false information. He lives locally in Oregon, and we might cause a stir. That being said, Nick with the fake news, Nick Thomas, how are you, bro?
I'm doing pretty good. After a few weeks of being
quarantined,
I'm doing better.
Have you ever been at risk for being quarantined?
No. I had a severe upper respiratory infection that turned into a severe sinus infection.
Oh, I hear that turned into a severe ear infection. Ooh. Do you still have your hearing?
In this year, I can barely hear.
Oh, Nick.
There was about 3 days I was lip reading.
Welcome to the club, dude. Did you heard about my perforated ear a month ago when I got sick just like that? Yeah, I went deaf for 3 days, finally in one ear, went to the doctor. He looked at it and he said, "Wow." And you don't want to hear your doctor say something like, "Wow," right? Because that brings a lot of concern to you. And I was like, "What?" And he asked if I put anything in my ear. It was a perforated eardrum generated from an ear infection.
You missed an opportunity there. Oof.
Ear infection? Come on.
He looked in my ears and quite literally said, "I cannot see your eardrums. I'm going to get two nurses in here to flush your ears." And for like the next 20 minutes, just like jets of hydrogen peroxide and warm water.
I thought they were going to grab straws and suck it clean.
I don't know what part of that was funny. That was just gross.
Like a Capri Sun.
Yeah, okay, we need to move on from this before not only our listeners are grossed out, but before I have to dip out. Guys, it's been a hot second since we've all been together. An even longer hot second. Can you stop gagging in the mic, Nick? I'm starting to become uneasy with this whole thing. Him. What?
It's bugging him.
I'm sure it is, but he doesn't need to carry it on to all of us.
Oh, no, I was saying that.
It doesn't. I was joking. I was trying to
gagging is bugging him.
No, the gagging is bugging me. I can't handle it. Anyway, moving on. Can't handle that. Guys, we're going to cover a variety episode this week. It's just three of us. It's been a hot minute since we've been together, but...
The three amigos.
Still love you, Matthew. But yes, tonight it is the Three Amigos. I don't know which one of us is Larry or Curly, but let's move on. Guys, let's... don't know how appropriate that reference was or wasn't, but let's move into Movie Matters. Guys, welcome to episode 82. It's not going to be quite a singular topic this beautiful Monday. However, we are going to cover all the topics because it's been a minute since we've done a podcast. So, that being said, welcome to Movie Matters. I have nothing specific on the news front that I've curated. However, I figured we could take this time to at least just cover a couple titles that we've checked out recently, give you a recommendation, and we'll move forward in the topic. Lynn, I know you're feeling good right now, but let's...
Oh, no, no, no. I'm saying titles that we've checked out in the... Once we get to gaming bits, I've got a whole lot to talk about.
Okay, we'll try to be quick on a couple of these things so we can give you enough time in gaming for sure. All right, Nick, what I want to throw over to you and just get, like, I want you to pick, let's say, two of, like, kind of the more critical titles that you would like to review, at least for the sake of this week's episode.
Movies.
Yeah, we're in movies right now.
Not TV.
And it could be a hot take like our Oktoberfest, Spookfest reviews. It doesn't have to be lengthy. We can just kind of keep it short and sweet and fun.
Did we ever review Oktoberfest? That was a good movie.
It was, and I don't think we did. No.
Oh, well. It was probably before we started really doing this.
Let's go back to that one, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched a Netflix original movie.
Yes.
It looked interesting. And I thought I had to give it a try. It was on Netflix. It's the new Mark Wahlberg movie, Spencer Confidential.
What? I'm actually, yeah. You're going to have to, you're teaching me right now because I'm not actually familiar with that one.
Yeah.
It's called Spencer. The synopsis here.
Spencer Confidential.
Okay.
It's about Mark Wahlberg. Where's the thing? Just a second. I had it.
So it's a 2020 release. I'll help you a little bit here. You got Mark Wahlberg playing Spencer. You've got Winston Duke playing Hawk, Alan Arkin playing Henry, and Eliza Schlesinger playing Sissy Davis. Yeah, if anyone knows
who Winston Duke is, he was the king, not the king, but the leader of like the guerrilla group in Wakanda.
Yeah. He was in Avengers Infinity War and Black Panther, yep. Oh, and he's also in Us. Oh, he played the dad in that Peele.
Yeah, the Peele horror movie.
Yeah.
Jordan Peele horror movie.
With the family and then the faces.
Yeah, and the doppelgangers. That was good. Okay, so he's in there. What's the overall premise? You got Mark Wahlberg, Winston Duke.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg, he gets out of prison and tries to pick up his life where it was and move on. He was a police officer that decided to – he was looking into a murder, and it seemed like everyone was trying to bury it, and he kind of lost his crap and went off on the detective that was supposed to be doing it and, like, viciously beat him up and went to prison for it. And then when he gets out, he finds out the whole thing was all a big cover-up for a big corruption thing, and he's trying to stop it. But that's what the whole thing's about. But it's actually really good. It's a lot of action, really funny moments. Mark Wahlberg on the top of his game, just being a badass.
I don't mean to interrupt, but does it play more like a thriller comedy, or does it play like,
is there that much comedy in it? Or is it just peppered throughout?
It kind of reminds, it's very much like a New World Tango and Cash. Buddy cop, the unlikely duo together working to try to figure the stuff out. There's definitely some humorous points, and there's definitely some like, oh shit, they went there moments. But all in all, it actually played out really well. Mark Wahlberg's always been believable as like a either Boston or Massachusetts police officer type thing.
Yeah, always. Yeah,
and that's and it was really well done. I liked it. It was another home run for Netflix.
More clarification here. Do they kind of act like vigilantes seeking out the previous case where he beat the cop up over, and they're trying to actually get that case closed or get that brought to the light and out of being covered up? Or is it a different...
Well, what ends up starting this ball rolling for him is the police officer that he got in a fight with is actually murdered along with another police officer. And he starts looking into what happened, and that's when he finds out it's all been a cover-up.
The plot thickens.
Yeah. Right. Nice.
And you can actually see a lot of that in the synopsis. It says after two of the police officers are killed, he goes and starts looking for it. But, no, it's...
So this is actually a Netflix original title then?
Correct.
So you definitely give it a watch? I'm feeling that from the way you're talking about
hands
it.
Hands down.
But, yeah, from what... the clarifications that I've gotten, it definitely feels like a watch on my end, or at least a checkout.
It had a lot of the feels of like those buddy cop shows that we're so used to, like The Other Guys, without being completely ridiculous.
Yeah, over the top ridiculous.
It almost like Lethal Weapon, different things like that. He's trying to do the right thing. His moral compass is just pointed in the right direction, and he got crapped on for it.
Nice.
But he always, Mark Wahlberg always has that whole, yeah, you can never keep him down no matter what role he's playing. He's just like, nah, we're going to get it done.
Well, Nick, that sounds like a promising title we should definitely check out. I unfortunately can't think of anything recently because I've been pretty busy this last week as far as films that I've caught. But I know you've got another title you've recently checked out, and I feel like it might be a splash from the past. So would you oblige us with one more review before we move on?
Yeah. No, Netflix has actually gotten a movie on their list that I haven't been able to find in a long time. I think the last time I saw it, it was on a VHS before my kids destroyed it.
Yeah, good old 90s.
But Netflix has dropped a classic, like one of my favorite movies growing up, and LeBron James is trying to destroy its legacy. I mean,
what?
But Space Jam.
Oh, yeah.
Dude.
Cue the theme song.
That live-action Looney Tunes mashup of glory with Michael Jordan and Bill Murray.
The glory days of Michael Jordan, and I think fairly stated, the tail end glory days of Looney Tunes even. I'd say there's streaming services that are bringing them back.
Yeah.
But as far as our age group and when they were in the heat of pop culture, I'd say Space Jam was kind of like that middle ground where people our age, when it came out, were still all about Looney Tunes, and sports fans were raging about Michael Jordan at the time when he was at the peak, at his peak.
If we're being fair here, it didn't just have Michael Jordan in it.
Oh no, it had
Charles Barkley and a few others.
And I remember that. I'm not a like sports guy. I lean on you guys to.
And that's where all the aliens got all their powers from. And Charles Barkley was there to try and save him and, you know, train him back up to help, you know, help Michael Jordan.
Well, yep. Lynn, thank you for a little refresher. I truly don't have any of, like, the sports team player knowledge.
Spoilers on the plot there. But
if you're late,
late to the game.
I know there's kids that were born after that. But if we're being honest, we got the 20 to 30 plus general audience speaking. If you're younger than that, I appreciate you guys being around and sticking around. Hopefully you learned something from our crazy asses. But That being said, Lynn, let me let you finish your.
No. That's pretty much. I mean, I don't want to dip too far into the.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
All the way to Moron Mountain.
No. Okay. Let me give you a very. Let me read off this spoiler-free, very short description. Well, hey, and
no.
You guys tell me.
I want to bring something up. Okay. That is in that movie based on today's culture. And that's the, you know, how he had all the TV screens and everything. And he's saying that, you know, people were addicted to the screen. I mean, where are we at now?
That was the concern. Right?
Yep. Even more addicted. Oh, shoot.
You're probably watching this on a mobile phone. Hashtag not a thing back then.
Hashtag woke.
Woke. Okay, in a desperate attempt to win a basketball match and earn their freedom, the Looney Tunes, of all people, seek the aid of retired basketball champion Michael Jordan. Nick, do you have, aside from pure nostalgia, do you have any other things? It could be nostalgic too. Do you have any other things you want to speak on it without, I guess, spoiling a 20-plus-year-old film at this point?
No, it was just good watching it because my youngest hadn't seen it yet, and he was all excited about it.
That's the part I love. So is
watching
introducing...
his excitement of it was just wonderful.
Oh man,
I love that. How old is he right now? 5, 6?
3.
Oh my goodness, my kids have recently gotten really hooked into the Hanna-Barbera age of cartoons because there's some streaming services out there that offer it. Boom. like Smurfs, Flintstones, the Jetsons. Like that was old even for us when we were young, because those came out super early 80s and beyond. But I love the fact that they're still available, because that just shows you they stand the test of time, because there was legit quality and humor behind them. Personal thoughts on that. And Looney Tunes included. Mm-hmm. Nick, going back to it with your aged old eyes, what kind of rating would you give it in 2020? And you could include some nostalgic feeling behind it too still. Does it stand the test of time watching it today, even though there's aged humor in it?
To me, I still loved it. I've watched it probably a few hundred times. But it is still one of my favorite movies.
He's like one of our kids rewatching Frozen.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. Do you feel woke
we
right
don't
now,
talk
Nick?
About Frozen.
Oh,
we don't talk about Frozen.
If we're being honest, yeah,
my bad.
If we're being honest, though, it has Bill Murray in it and several other
Bill Murray,
several other comedians from the decade.
You're not wrong.
Oh, geez,
you're not wrong.
Come on, and I got to say the soundtrack. Mint.
I believe I can fly. Thank you for that. Hey guys, we don't want copyright strikes. All right,
we only went like what,
four, a one liner,
three seconds.
Fair enough.
2 seconds.
Fair enough. It's clean.
If you stand for 11 seconds, you're fine.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the limit? Okay.
All right, let's push it. Let's see. Let's do the.
I believe I can touch this guy.
The 1.5 speed version of I believe.
Two, three. I'm kidding. All right. Nick, is there anything else you want to sweep onto the rug tonight, or shall we move on? I don't know what kind of analogy
no,
I was trying to make there.
Throw out there real quick. Disney Plus now has Black Panther on there for people that haven't seen it yet. It just came to Disney Plus, so I know that those are some of the ones people need to stay up on, especially if you like your Avengers movies.
Absolutely.
And they're in their final season of
Clone Wars. Yeah. They've made it 7 years, 7 seasons. I mean,
I would shit would go longer. I love the Clone Wars series.
I'm getting into it now, because here's the thing. That's TV talk, but just as a quick side note, I didn't realize how dark it could get for a kid's show, which is why it's still surviving, honestly. I don't know the ratio of kids to adults that are watching it, but it's enough to bring in the best of both halves, I would say, audience-wise. But
I feel like it falls under the category like My Little Ponies, where there is not so many little girls watching it, but more full-grown adult males.
Hashtag bronies. But yes, yes, pop culture noobs, that's what it's called. But hey, so that's pretty sweet. That's awesome. Lynn, do you have any ironic films you've seen recently that come to mind, or shall we just jump into some TV talk?
Nope, nothing ironic.
Oh, quick side note. You brought up Disney Plus, and the only thing, it's not top of the news, as in we've learned of this a couple weeks ago, if you keep up with the news, but Disney had officially come out and said, I think in the first month or two, that they're sitting nice and comfy on like 26 million subscribers already. And that happened all in the first month or two. I'm not quoting it specifically,
is
but
that it?
For a brand new service that's only about one thing, come that's on, kind man. Of impressive in a 2 month span.
But that one thing strives on being the one thing.
I know, but can I throw out here that Netflix only has 100 million and they've been rocking it for 17 years?
Yeah, I was just poking fun.
No, I know, I know. Yeah. That we do that, and that we do that to each other. I know.
Step up your numbers, Disney Plus. Damn it!
They're working on it, and they're adding stuff all the time. Not a Disney Plus fanboy. Hashtag am Disney Plus fanboy. Anyway, moving on, guys. That's gonna cut it for movie talk in this episode. Let's jump into a little bit of TV talk. Guys, welcome to TV Talk. We don't got any news, and that's okay, because we're here to reconvene with the nerds at hand and talk about things familiar, new, and old. Are you trying to do some bullshit on the side while I talk, Lynn? I'm confused.
No, we're projecting energy.
Oh, he's trying to sprinkle energy. Nicholas, wake the f*** up. That's our first bleep for the night. Although, actually not correct. I'm going to bleep you earlier for something you said.
Yep.
Still keeping it family friendly. F*** all your kids.
Family.
Kidding.
Family.
I'm feeling saucy. This is going to be a really good segment. We're going to keep plowing. Hashtag plowing through the episode here. In hopes of generating Nick right. energy and you energy and all of us energy. So let's go. All right. Here we go. Boom. All right, guys. First up, hot take, couple series that are second or third seasons in, we won't dive deep, but if you want to go deeper, I know you do. If you're a fan of this conversation, hit that like and leave a comment down below that you'd like to see a deep dive, because we're so good at keeping up on deep dives, right, Lynn? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah. Sorry if that hurt.
Hashtag all right. callback to Rick and Morty.
Going to get to it.
Which we
definitely
haven't even finished
it. It's not even summertime yet. We'll get to it. Promise.
But we haven't gotten through season three yet.
Would you like to cut open my vein, suck my blood on a promise? Because I will let you.
Nope.
That was gross, like Nick. Thank you.
Like to have Nick record this one, which he is on his end.
We're recording, but I'm not dismissing what I just said.
We still haven't finished season three. But
all right.
Cheers, mate.
Guys, my first highlight, none of my brethren that love each other dearly. To keep up on things, we hyped Sabrina so well on Netflix season 1 and 2. It's okay. It's okay. Like my wife, I'm like, honey, it's fine. I can love a show without you. That being said, Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina season 3, continues to excel. More of the same. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10, not a solid 10. Because it's nothing specifically new, but it still excels at keeping you in love with the characters that you fell in love with in season 1.
You mean still good content, but same old fetch quests that you're used to?
I will throw out a small integer in that sentiment. I will agree with you, Lynn, by saying if you're a fan, stick with it. It is good. And there are a couple shakeups that make me super curious about season 4.
Okay.
Also,
at least you have new content to look forward to, unlike us over on the Destiny front.
Anyone not familiar with gaming, I apologize for that note, but at the same time, that was a cold burn. Cold so, burn to anyone that knew what that meant. Sorry.
I still love it. And like Sabrina, I keep going back to it.
That's kind of how season 3 felt. Not going to lie. So actually, oh my God, am I adjusting? I'm going to give it an 8.
Ooh.
I don't do this why? On air. I don't know why I'm doing this right now, but when you made that analogy, it made very crystal clear on the perspective that I still love it deeply, and the fanboy in me would give it a 10, but the analytic critic would say, did it truly live up to season 1 standards? And honestly, season 1 and season 2 were produced at the same time. Literally a 22 CW episode because Greg Berlanti was the primary producer who's known for 20 plus episode CW shows. But they tried to make it for Netflix. Okay. So they had to do, you know, the 10 episode binge mode, right?
Okay. Fair. But did you also feel the same way, Nick? That it was a little...
How far are you? Did you watch at least up to season 2, or are you that far behind? No shame. No shame.
I watched season 1, the Christmas special, and season 2.
Okay.
I have not watched season 3 yet.
Okay. So your general scope of 1 and 2, though, did 2 seem like just a continuation of 1 and like it was meant to be one big season?
I understand why you'd think that. And the first part of it felt that way, but once you got towards the end of it, it took a left hook.
Okay, fair enough. I will agree with that. I don't have anything to counter on that. So, bottom line, Chilling Adventures of Sabrina Season 3 are golden, worth checking out. Not necessarily binge-worthy, but take your time, enjoy it while it's here, because... It might be a full year before season 4. That is confirmed, as far as I know, that they're going to continue going with it because it did well enough for Netflix. I love it. I love all the actors in it. We'll talk deeper if you guys want a deep dive. I'll do a solo cap or hook up with one of the other nerds to dive in. Whatever the case. But let's move on in our TV talk. Nick... To get a little back and forth, I'm going to toss it over to you. What's a show you would like to cover real quick?
I watched a relatively new show on Netflix called I Am Not Okay With This. This is based off a graphic novel by Charles Forsman? What's his name? Yeah, Charles Forsman. He's most known for creating alternate graphic novels. This show, the synopsis for it is, Sydney is a teenage girl navigating the trials and tribulations of high school while dealing with the complexities of her family, her budding sexuality, and mysterious superpowers just beginning to awaken deep within her. This movie is, the show is one of those ones that there is a running person commentating in the background, and it's like her thoughts throughout the whole thing.
So a continual narration from her thoughts.
Correct, because the book and this is pretty much from the point of her writing a journal. Like, dear journal, this sucks. Blah blah blah, and going off on it, right? But the main actress is. What's her face? Sorry. Sophia Lillis. Most people will know her from the new Stephen King remake of It. She was the redhead girl that worked with the kids.
I've seen her and a couple others from It that are in newer titles coming out. So that excites me because they were really good actors in the first chapter of It, and so I kind of look forward to seeing what they do next. So that's cool that she's in this.
Was there anybody else from It that was in?
So I called it out while watching a trailer, and my wife, not gonna throw her under the bus directly, love you honey, but I said, that looks like Stan, that looks like Suicide Stan, like, no it is, and I know that's,
no you're right,
but it is. I looked it up after the trailer.
Wyatt Olef, you're right.
Yeah, the kid that played as Stanley in Chapter 1 of It is the same actor. I'm like, no, these fools, these kid actors are getting movie roles left and right, and that's totally him. Just anyway.
You are right.
I gotta stop puffing myself up. Sorry, fam.
But it follows basic teenage girl going through all the high school crap and going through a whole bunch of stuff after her father has passed away from killing himself. And it just follows all this teenage angst and anger and all this. But then it, like I said just a little bit ago, takes a left hook just out of nowhere. And then all of a sudden, oh, she's got powers. She's like, is she going to go like carry on people and just like use her shit?
As you're talking about it, I'm remembering the trailer and thinking to myself, I'm actually very excited to check this out.
Yeah, no, and when I first saw it, I'm like, I don't know. And then it kind of carried on after I was watching another show that just started afterwards. And I came in drinking my drink, and then it just kept going. I sat down and realized about three episodes later, I just kept watching it.
Like, this isn't the same show. Wait a minute. I'm hooked. Yeah. Are we going to review that next?
It was definitely interesting.
It looks
good. And it kept me hooked. It almost had like a narrated Stranger Things vibe to it.
I'm down with that. That's
cool. It was quirky. It was different is the reason why I liked it. It wasn't that it was something crazy awesome. It was that it was completely different in that whole superpower genre.
I'm very fascinated by shows or films that are capable of taking a very dramatic new take on something, you know, that might be familiar, but so that excites me based on your recommendation, Nick.
Well, that, and we've been really missing the narrated genre, like a good one.
There's been good ones in the past, it's been a long time.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, to stand out like this.
Yeah. Well, like one of my other recently favorite narrated ones is actually another Netflix, Daybreakers.
Nice segue. Don't mean to call it out. Go on.
Yeah. But that was also narrated. We've actually covered this already.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think we've already covered Daybreakers, so he's not going to go.
I'm actually done on my review for, I'm not okay with this.
Yeah, but like,
for entitled, I'm not okay with this. I was very okay with it. It was a very good show.
And you would definitely give it a watch rating?
Yeah, definitely watch it. Yeah. It was definitely worth the time.
For sure. All right.
My bad.
There's very few movies and shows that I look at my wife and I'm like, you would actually really enjoy this. You should give it a shot. Because a lot of times when she sees me watching a show, she's like, you watch the weirdest shit?
That's right. So, unfortunately, a normal reaction from a spouse.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to anyone.
I'm a Whovian, and she just finds that weird.
What I mean, Lynn, is aside from your perfect marriage, a lot of people have opposing spouses that are like, what the hell are you watching? That's all I'm saying.
No, like when I started The Witcher, Robin was like, what is this? Is this a game? Is this a new game? Those look like pretty badass graphics. And I was like, no, this is the show based on
the book,
not the game, but the book or the game or whatever you feel like it's based on. But
two shows right now that can only be viewed exclusively on I Know Friends, a subscription-based service. But I promise you, by the end of this review, we will give you, we're not sponsored, but we will give you solid reason to click on a free trial at the least. And possibly, if you are a fan of the content we're covering right now, you will subscribe. I know I have, because what I've been watching is that good to me. I feel like Nick would agree on some level, but let's get down to the brass tacks, Nick. So, two shows that we're going to cover right now, back to back. One of them I'm not super caught up on, but you have recently caught up on. And these shows entail the corner of the sci-fi fandom universe, Star Trek. That's the topic at hand. And no, we're not talking about the days of old with Star Trek. We're talking about some very current, very modern takes on some very beloved franchises. One of which kicked things off nearly almost 3 years ago now. Are they, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, are they going into a third season? Is that what it is?
They are going into a third season this year.
Okay. So, I'm going to hot tail it right now to keep you guys looped. If you're Trekkie fans, thanks for sticking around. We're going to cover Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard. The first of which I'm not fully caught up on, but Lynn's going to join us for the ride nonetheless, is Star Trek Discovery. I jumped in about most of season one, but then due to many reasons, not because I didn't want to keep watching it, but I fell off unintentionally. Hashtag 2020 and too much content to watch, right? That's, for me, that's the main reason of slipping off many other shows aside from this one. I know. Lynn will continue shrugging his shoulders throughout to play to play the passive fan that's not completely into what we're about to cover, nonetheless, but still supportive. So, Nick, you have completely caught up through the end of season two. Give us your hot take feelings on how the show is as a whole. And the thing I'd want to know from you as a fan of Star Trek, but someone who hasn't caught up with it, why do I need to get into it? So give me those takes.
Well, as a fan of Star Trek, you need to get into it because it covers something we haven't seen before. It explains, if you've watched the first season of this, the second season explains why the differences are there and why we've never heard of this before. It actually ties in and fixes everything.
So if I can just briefly, very quickly, interject with a notion of what you mean by that based on like my experience with it, is in the history of Star Trek fandom, we've seen, you know, canon of said story carry forward for the better part of 20, 30 years. Then we've had films with, you know, directed by J.J. Abrams try to reboot certain timelines to tell a fresh take on it. And then we've had a show, and then we've had a show like Star Trek Discovery try to come back and either connect the dots or bring back the majority of original fandom back to the classic fandom of it. So if you could elaborate a little bit on that, if that's true, if I'm accurate on that, is that...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The Star Trek, the new shows with J.J. Abrams, is considered what's called the Kelvin timeline. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the original timeline that we know of with Kirk, the original TV series, Jean-Luc Picard, Voyager, Janeway, all that, Archer from Star Trek Enterprise, that is the original prime timeline. It's like alternate universes and stuff.
Right.
The Discovery is based in the prime universe. And this is actually before Kirk's 5-year mission, but after, Jonathan Archer's mission.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
This, takes place, when the Federation first runs into the Klingons. When the first season happened, a lot of people were upset about how they changed the look of the Klingons, how the technology looks so advanced and there was no reason why it should be, according to other Star Treks. Because basically, if anyone's watched the first season of this, the starship USS Discovery has what's called a spore drive, and it it travels differently than anyone has ever seen. Like I said, by the end of this, they explain that and fix it.
And that's something, but Nick, that was something I was always curious about, just because, just to add to that side notion about, like, specifically Klingons, which is a very infamously popular Star Trek alien race, always dark brown skinned with ridges on their forehead. As far as the Next Generation with Patrick Stewart playing as Picard is concerned, going from the late 80s into the 90s, but something that happened even early on within canon is that the Captain Kirk era had very minimal prosthetics, like very small, minor head ridge changes to make him look alien, so they were very human in appearance. And then, only, what, 10, 20 years later, with Patrick Stewart helming the next Enterprise, Klingons suddenly had very distinct facial features that were full prosthetic, and at the time, they never really explained it from that old, you know, Captain Kirk era to Picard. But this series, what you're telling me, and I knew this was part of Star Trek Discovery, is it's like a solid prequel that kind of showcases an extreme origin of the Klingons, but then over the season one and two, starts explaining what fans have always been like, what the f***, if I'm going to be honest. Like, why did the Captain Kirk era have such basic, hardly anything there? And then Lieutenant Commander Worf, serving on Enterprise alongside Patrick Stewart, bam, he's got massive features that are way different than anything we've seen before. And Star Trek Discovery takes an extreme look at where the race started, and then you're telling me they appropriately show kind of the transitions of why they changed visually, being the same alien
and you
race.
Actually see the visual change to what we know as Klingons now.
Sorry, not to throw you off for a loop, but I just kind of wanted to clarify that that show does this for sure. Like, it feeds the nerds the need to know why things change in a show that were not previously explained.
No, but this is one of the more drama-led Star Trek series that have ever been. Because they do something that none of the other Star Trek shows have actually done before.
I'm just pointing a finger at the screen if you guys are watching on YouTube. I was just hoping you were going down this direction as far as... dang, drunken brain fart. I'll cut that out.
Well, every Star Trek series has always followed the captain.
Oh, I was going to say, episodically, how shows have been structured versus how this show is structured.
There's definitely difference.
Yeah, I knew that's the direction you were going down, so go ahead. So, the previous shows have always been 26 whopping episodes on prime television. They've always gone, post-Captain Kirk, they've always tried to do 7 seasons, 26 episodes, and that would be the run, and they'd end it, and then they'd continue. Deep Space Nine followed that same thing, and Star Trek Voyager also followed suit with that same format. But what I'm getting at is, prime television back in the 90s used to run super long. Like, the CW still does that, 20-plus episodes per season. Whereas CBS All Access was going for a streaming thing that Netflix has done, where they shrink down the length of a season to make it more dramatically epic, rather than, a one-and-done story every episode, where we get a plot, we figure out the problem, everyone's happy by the end of it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tossing it back to you.
Star Trek. It's okay. Every Star Trek beforehand, it was very episodic. It would kind of go across the story arc, but this episode would cover this is what's happening. There would be a whole start to it, an introduction to the idea. Then it would go through, solve the issue, and then everything would go back to normal.
Every episode had basically a three-act structure.
Yep.
Right.
This series is very story arc driven. Because they wanted to bring that drama alive and bring it in a way that we haven't seen before. The whole series is along a big story arc. You're trying to figure out from the beginning to the end, how is this going to unfold? And like I said before, every other series before this followed the captain. And at the point of the captain, it's an advisory leader role over the top of everything. This show follows one of the crew members, specifically crewman, Burnham. What's the best way to put this?
She's a second...
fallen.
Yeah.
She's a fallen Starfleet officer.
Right. She's not like the up on a pedestal captain. She's a secondary officer, but the show still follows her.
Yeah. But it follows her and everything along with it. Burnham was actually, you learn in the first episode, she was actually spending life in prison for causing mutiny on her ship. And her mutiny actually caused the whole Federation Klingon War. And this is something that hasn't been covered in any of the Star Trek series before. But because it's following one of the crewmen instead of the captain, it leads it to be more humanistic. You get more of the drama, the day-to-day life, instead of just the captain's view over everything. Because when you look at how the captain's looking at everything, it's from a point from the top down. Right. You know what I mean? And then this, you're getting it from the ground level, feelings, emotions, everything's raw.
And what's cool about this, just as a side take, before we get to like your overall feelings, and I'd love you to just jump to why we should jump in, so we don't drag the episode out too long. Something unique about this character is she's human, but she was raised by Vulcans, so she's got that disciplinary aspect, not to focus on emotions, but she's constantly not troubled.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. I didn't mean to like overstep or go super deep in it. I'm just trying to say that correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. She was raised to not rely on emotions, but because she's human throughout season one, at least, she's constantly struggling with the need to maintain that emotionless attitude in her disciplines in Starfleet, but still struggles with it because she is human.
Yeah, but the thing is, yes, she was raised on Vulcan, but she was raised by a very special and well-known family on Vulcan.
Yes.
She is raised by Sarek, who everyone, if they know, is Spock's father.
If you're a Trekkie. Now,
Spock is actually half Vulcan, half human.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, she was raised by Sarek, but she was also raised by Amanda, who is human. So she had both raising. So she had the emotional upbringing and stuff and the human side. So, but there's definitely a conflict because she is more human. So that definitely inbred that conflict of emotion versus logic even farther than what Spock would have had to deal with.
Right.
She's technically, in all aspects, raised as Spock's sister.
Yeah, which is crazy as a Trekkie fan, because the premise of the show is, I just read up, it's supposed to be 10 years before Captain Kirk took off on his first...
On his five-year mission.
On his five-year mission that original Trekkie fans will be very familiar with. But in Trek fandom, there's no mention of anything about this. But what's cool about the way that they've tackled Star Trek Discovery is there's a lot of, because it's sci-fi, there's a lot of untold years in stories where there's ample room to expand as long as they're careful. And in my opinion on what I've seen in Discovery is the writers are very much Trekkie fans at heart, which is why the continuity and the direction that these writers have taken the show has been so well received because they're not making the mistakes that perhaps Enterprise might have made a few years, a decade ago, where they changed things about the history of Trek that were controversial or questioning from a Trekkie fan. But Discovery has really tackled on maintaining, here's a side story you didn't know, and we're going to be very careful not to trample over the canon that you do know.
I agree. And I got to say, there are people that were upset about how Discovery was going, and they said, oh, this isn't how Star Trek happened. This isn't the way it's supposed to happen.
And you're going to get that
watch
no matter what.
The whole damn thing. If you do not watch to the last 5 minutes of the last episode, you will think exactly that.
Right. And they, so give me the hot take, which you're doing right now. Why should hardcore fans get into it? And maybe if you could, on a broader sense, explain why it's just a generally good show that even if you don't have the background knowledge, in my opinion, I think it's a good drama.
If you don't have the background knowledge, it is a very gripping story. It is not just a story of overcoming oneself. It is a story of adventure and a story of protecting and fighting for what matters most to you. It's a very powerful story, and it drives you to want to watch the next one. The acting in it is phenomenal. The aesthetics of the whole show is beautiful beyond comparison to most shows that you see these days. But from a Trekkie standpoint, I recommend watching this because it fills in so many blanks. It fills in why the Starfleet has its protocols, why Starfleet has like first contact rules, has all these different rules. These are created within this show. It covers different things that we've heard about in different Star Trek series, but never actually saw. And it dives deep into the mythology of some of the unknown branches of Starfleet.
Right.
And it unfolds it like a book and gives you all the information you didn't have before and just smacks you around with it. The way that it unfolds is just, it's poetry. It's beautiful. And they did so much fan service for this. Not like anime fan service, but lore fan service.
Yeah.
As a Trekkie, this completes some knowledge base that you need to understand the universe of Star Trek.
Fair enough. Nick, I know what the number is going to be, but on 1 to 10 scale, give me season 1 and 2.
Season 1? I'll give it a 9. Season 2, I give it a solid 10.
Nice. So if you stuck around through season 1, the 10 is completely justified. In my head, that's
the reason why the 9 doesn't... The first season just gets a 9 instead of a 10. There was a little bit of a lull within the last part of that season, which almost lost me. And then they turned it around. It was like 2 episodes. But there was a reason for it, and I didn't realize it until they reached into my stomach and pulled out my entrails.
Way to be Dindy Gross, man. Fudge.
Yeah. No, it's...
So, I'm going to catch up on Star Trek Discovery, but to round out the end of this episode on TV Talk, we're just going to briefly cover what we know up to so far in real short on Star Trek Picard, which is the second original series produced on CBS All Access. I'll just a brief, very brief background, and we'll dive in super deep at a later time when the season's over. Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart, my apologies, fans, was given a pitch for this series over a year ago, and the initial pitch, I don't know what it entailed, because we'll maybe cover that in our deep dive, but he was given the pitch and he immediately said no thanks. Because here's the thing, you guys all got to understand, Patrick Stewart is climbing to his 80s here as an actor. He is super seasoned. He spent 7 years on Star Trek Enterprise. He's played Charles Xavier for the X-Men for the last 20 years now, on and off, and done a bunch of films in between. He's very seasoned, and a lot of fans consider him just a really special person as far as what he's offered to the industry in film and television. That being said, the writers trying to propose this series focused around his character from The Next Generation are such like passionate fans that they went back to the drawing board, reworked the pitch, knowing how proper Sir Charles Xavier or Sir Patrick Stewart is, that they wanted to do the character justice. They knew he wouldn't be in it unless it was a meaningful project that he could get into. And they came up with what we have seen up to this point in 7 episodes currently aired is the magic sauce that made Patrick Stewart be like, I'm in. Someone who already spent 7 years, 7 seasons, 26 episodes a season, over 200 episodes of a sci-fi franchise, the only way he was going to come back and reprise a role of that magnitude with that time invested was if there was going to be something special about it. Because he's theater trained. He's got all that behind him on top of the years he's spent in the industry. So when they finally got the sauce correct and said, here's what we want. It's not a gimmick. It's not for the Trekkies. We want to truly pay tribute to a very iconic character in the history of fandom. When they presented it to him finally, the second take, he's like, I'll do it. Literally, word for word, that was his quote, I'll do it. And we'll get in deeper on what his presence means as an actor to the other cast that was thrown into the show, but we're just going to right now give you guys a hot take on the premise of the show and why it's so good up to this point and why you should jump in now. In my opinion, here's what it is. So, and I want to hear your take a second, Nick, here right after I lay this out. So for me, the reason, okay, first off, it was originally just going to be called Picard. They went with Star Trek Picard. So, you know, people that are not super fans might be able to connect with it or know, oh, okay, this is a Star Trek thing. But regardless of that, we'll get into that another time. It's focused on the present day of where Captain Picard of the USS Enterprise D would be 20 years later from the last film that came out based on his crew. So he's retired, he's an admiral, he's not part of Starfleet anymore. We'll get into the nitty-gritty later, but basically he's just trying to live his life with his favorite dog, his two helpers that live with him on his vineyard, because he always wanted to, he loved wine, he always wanted to just, that was the retirement life that he had always thought he wanted. And that's where the show kind of kicks off, is okay, he's retired, he was an admiral, 20 years later, he's not with any of his crew. A mysterious character who we don't know anything about approaches him. She's young, she looks like she's in her 20s. She says, I know who you are, I need help. And that kicks off this crazy premise of an idea for a show where we're bringing back a classic Star Trek character. We're not playing by the books anymore, like Star Trek Discovery isn't playing by the books. They went from episodic to it's going to be story arc drama driven. Picard plays the same note. The show Picard plays the same idea of we're going to make this epic story about a retired character that's beloved, known by hundreds of thousands of people within the story. And he is retired, and this crazy thing that comes into his life draws him back into the adventure. And I say the adventure because that's like the heart and breath of what people love about Star Trek, is it's the is going into the unknown and discovering new things. And for Trekkie fans, this show will bring you to your knees emotionally if you have any amount of time invested in the original show that Patrick Stewart was a part of. Led the series he led. But, and so it's hard for me to recommend it to someone who's not a Trekkie at all. But in my opinion, and Nick, you can agree, disagree in your hot take on this, I'm going to wrap up with this. The show is so well written. The budget is so huge. The cinematography, the freaking music. I would say two perspectives on the music. They incorporate some nostalgic bullshit that makes me cry because they pull notes from the original series and incorporate it in this Lord of the Rings, Star Wars epic level score for a TV
show.
For a TV show. They pull some very familiar notes in certain scenes that are like, oh my god, this is from the original series. My childhood is making me crumble, right? But from an outsider perspective that's never seen the original show, it's just, I'm gonna be honest, f***ing beautiful. As a score, from just a musician standpoint, the music is... I put my earphones in when watching this, and the surround sound and the volume of bass and symphony is so f***ing epic. This should be in freaking theaters. That's all I want to say about that. Like, just, if you're not compelled for any other reason than a really insanely well-driven drama that makes you want to know what's happening next, and a music score that draws you to your knees, even if you're not a fan, even if you didn't see the original shit, I still think the quality of this show would still interest you, even if you don't have the nostalgia. So, I'm going to give it two scores for me, and then I want your hot take and scores. From a fan, I give this a freaking 11 out of 10. Plus, plus, plus. I'm not going to be silly. I'm just going to say 10 out of 10. No questions. From an outsider trying very hard to see this from someone who doesn't have the past experience, I still, for its quality, I want to give it a 10 out of 10. Because I, every time, every episode, I'm watching it week to week, Nick, every episode blows me away, leaves me with a cliffhanger, and just emotionally breaks me from a fan perspective, and maybe not as intensely if you're not a fan, but still makes you want to know what the hell is happening next. Because Patrick Stewart, as an actor, draws me in by himself, but just everything orchestrated together as a piece of, I know, incredible. I'm sorry if that was super long-winded. I want to let you give me your hot takes, and I want your scores as well.
You said that the musical score brought notes from the original series.
Shot.
I need to correct you there.
Oh, I don't think it's a correction. Can you say... Hold on, because I think I know what you're going to say. He's going to go get some air to wake
not,
him up.
Not just... the original series.
I know that's where you're going, and I missed it. That's in my opinion, that can be dived in deeper for sure, but I still want you to touch it because you're making a point I didn't make. So run with it, but don't make it a correction. Make it an addition, an addition to what I said.
On top of it being from the original series, they also took music appropriately from different parts of different series within the Star Trek universe.
I think it was episode 4 or 5 that was a very...
Yeah.
For me personally, I'm just going to make a side note. was touched on a very specific nostalgia for me that Oh my God. Okay, stop right there. Yes. But go on. Yeah.
Yes.
That also touched me as well.
No, it's I just have to say that they actually wrote this in a way that even if you had never watched a Star Trek series in your life, because the background he gives you, the flashbacks, everything going on, they actually cover enough for you not to be lost. So someone coming straight into Star Trek, into Picard, could enjoy this.
I
They
agree.
might even enjoy it more than someone that's been watching it forever, just for the sheer fact that you're seeing the fight of a man who has stood for so much justice and right, trying to make things right. It's an epic story in itself. It doesn't need the rest of the Star Trek universe to make it work. They've made this completely able to stand on its own because of the background they give you throughout the episodes. They bring some actors that we haven't seen in such a long time, and they bring them under one roof, and it's beautiful to see what they've done here. I was almost wishing we would have saw more of the different actors throughout the series. And I'm surprised we haven't.
I mean, the plus side to that sentiment is we do know officially that they have greenlit a second season, even though we have no idea how season one's going to wrap up. Like with the epic level of what the plot has laid out for us, we both you and me could make speculations, but we don't truly know where they're going to either wrap it up or leave us hanging, because they've already verified a second season with it, so.
I have high expectations for the series, barring, God forbid, anything happened to Patrick Stewart. Because, as you said, he's 80 years old.
You shut your mouth. We need at least a few more years with him, but yeah. Yeah,
I
he's
agree.
up there. He's getting up there.
Here's the thing people don't understand. One of the reasons why Patrick Stewart said no to this was he was just about to start running on his one-man Broadway show.
Oh, that was like
He,
his initial reason to not get into something else.
yeah, he had a one-man Broadway show where he was going to play 30 different roles.
Oh, I read this, dude. This is we need to kind of skim through this a little bit, but because that needs to be, we need to get thorough notes and do the deep dive regarding that, but. You're right, dude. I remember reading that and thinking, oh man, like it makes sense. Aside from just, I don't want to be involved unless it's something that's going to be truly meaningful. Like it's just something he doesn't want to be a part of. And yeah, he was already going to commit to something else.
Yeah, but the reason why he came to this is because they did something they realized they needed to do. They came back to it and they said, "Hey, Sir Patrick Stewart, Patrick, hey, we're not only wanting you to help with the show, we want you to lead it." A lot of the choices, the creative choices and everything, where the show goes, are choices that Patrick Stewart has made.
Yeah. Totally, dude. Yeah.
So, he is helping pretty much write the show, and we're getting someone that's a Broadway veteran, someone who is a true thespian of the theater that is actually bringing true story, true drama, true
Very.
Shakespearean
He's bringing a level of
tragedy to the screen.
He brings a level of authenticity to the character, and if you go into the show knowing his pedigree, every line he says and every facial emotional thing that he placates to his co-stars is very apparent. Nothing is being phoned in for this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, Nick, so that we save other things for a deeper dive, what is your rating and recommendation on this?
I have to put this right up there with Discovery. This is one of the best written Star Trek shows ever. And I've been a fan since the beginning.
I mean, word. I mean, you're only a year old, 30 years into the franchise.
No. Well,
I'm kidding.
I grew up with my grandparents, and I grew up watching the original Star Trek, all the Kirk. I've watched every single episode that has ever been aired for Star Trek.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I get it.
I give this show a 10. Everyone should watch it. There's no excuse for anyone watching this other than it's a subscription channel.
Right, and on a plus side,
if you're on the fence of whether you should get the subscription, you should.
Yeah.
Take a dive, and you will not be disappointed.
Absolutely. You hear that, Lynn? I know you were here for all of it. Appreciate you, sir.
Well, I could hear it through my headset. Sitting over there by the window.
On a side note, to our listeners, quick curtain pull back. We've got a bunch of kids right now that are struggling to go to sleep. So we are going to wrap this up. All of us recommend, me and Nick recommend the Star Trek Picard show. Boom. End of story. We did some movie, we did some TV. Guys, we will reconvene for a wider spectrum next week where we will cover some gaming. But always, as always, hop on YouTube at youtube.com/nerdentials, or just look up Nerdentials. Look up our other content. We've got playthroughs, co-op playthroughs that are pretty hilarious, and this podcast. That being said, though, my fellow nerds and everyone that's followed us and watching now, this has been your Nerdy Essentials. For me, Nick, and Lynn, we will see all of you on the other side.
The other side.
I feel, Nick, like you purposely held off knowing that Lynn was finally here in person and could properly sync. No? Am I just calling you out like an asshole?